Hello, and welcome to Twerpcast episode 61. Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. This marks the 5th annual Triple Threat Cast, Will Cast, all things Will Smith. I'd like to introduce you to Jada Pinkett's second choice for marriage, Jim Caswell.
And he's Doug Zeitlin, also known as Agent D, for doofus. Let us start out with a minor apology. Life got in the way, so we've been gone for 2 months. But we're back. While we didn't get a chance to do an Avengers review, when it comes out on DVD, we'll do a special one at that point to tell you exactly how great the Avengers were. As with all of our anniversary episodes, we decided that we'd focus in on yet another triple threat. We figured that as long as we did Kevin Smith last year, we should talk about his comic book rules brother, Will Smith. You know that rule, right, Doug?
What's that rule, Jim?
If two characters have the same last name, they must be related somehow.
That makes sense, Jim.
So Will Smith must be the brother of Kevin Smith. And they look so much alike. Well, at least Kevin Smith wishes he looked like Will Smith. Heck, his wife probably wishes that he looked like Will Smith.
Yeah, who do you think she's thinking about while they're doing it? You'd think with her yelling out, Agent Smith, all the time, he'd figure it out.
A lot of times we feature directors at this time of the year, but in spite of the fact that he hasn't sat in the director's chair yet, Will Smith is a trifecta as well.
Yes, he's a rapper, TV and movie actor, and a producer.
That's three in my book. Will Smith, whose real name is Willard Christopher Smith Jr., was born September 29th, 1968, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And it wasn't until I started doing research for this that I realized that he's actually 2 years older than I am. That means that he's the same age as our friend Ken.
He certainly aged better. It was in Philadelphia where Will met his childhood friend Jeffrey Towns.
Jeffrey Towns, as in DJ Jazzy Jeff?
That's the one.
I will admit, that's about most I know about rap, right there.
Yes, DJ Jazzy Jim.
Smith started as the MC of DJ Jazzy Jeff and The Fresh Prince in 1985. Towns was the turntablist and the producer, and apparently they had another friend named Clarence Holmes, who was Ready Rock C. And he was the human beatbox. Their group was known for performing humorous, radio-friendly songs. Now, I'll be honest. I don't like rap music. It's not a race thing or anything of that nature. It's more of a cultural thing. I've been told multiple times that the reason I don't like rap is because I don't know the culture. I haven't lived on the streets. All that type of stuff. And they're right, I haven't. I can't identify with the life that most rappers sing about. That isn't what makes me dislike rap, though. A lot of times, the stuff that they sing about, the drug use, the abusing women, the thug life, the drive-by shootings, things of this nature, I don't feel like that should be something that is put out for people to look up to. It's perpetuating a negative stereotype. And a lot of times people use entertainment as a banner to follow. And I don't necessarily think that that's a banner that people should align themselves under.
For me, it would just be a little simpler. You called it rap music, which to me is an oxymoron. You can't be rap and music. But let's be fair. You can't be country and music. You can't be Western and music. You can't be disco and music. I mean, there's a lot of things that don't cross that line.
I know, you spell rap with a C at the front. But I said all of that so that I could say that I remember when The Fresh Prince came out. And while the style of music wasn't something that I necessarily enjoyed, I did appreciate the fact that he did have those family-friendly lyrics. He did have things that were humorous. He wasn't trying to perpetuate the thug life. He was trying to have fun, and I appreciated that. Some of his albums include Rock the House in 1987. Here's the DJ, I'm the Rapper in 1988, And in This Corner in 1989, Home Base in 1991, and Code Red in 1993. It was around that time that NBC discovered him and built a sitcom around him called The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. The show ran for 6 years, which increased Smith's popularity worldwide. I recently saw an interview where he was talking about in every corner of the globe that he goes, people sing the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song to him.
It was after his acting career started that Will Smith also broke out with a solo music career. His albums include Big Willie Style in 1997, Millennium in 1999, Born to Rain in 2002, Lost and Found in 2005.
Him showing that he had acting chops with NBC allowed him to branch out into some film roles. While he was still working on Fresh Prince, he started taking some movie roles, including, at the very end of it, what is reported to be his breakout hit, Independence Day, as Captain Steve Hiller in 1996. Personally, I remember 3 years before that, when I saw him in Six Degrees of Separation, and he showed that he had some real acting chops. He wasn't a comedian. He was playing completely opposite type, and he showed that he actually had some depth as an actor.
To be honest with you, the only thing I liked about Six Degrees of Separation was Will Smith.
True enough, it was a tough movie. I thought that Stockard Channing did a really good job in that movie as well. It did earn her an Oscar nomination. Other movies that he's been in. In 1992, he was in Where the Day Takes You, Made in America in 1992, the aforementioned Six Degrees of Separation in 92. He showed that he had skills as an action actor in Bad Boys in 1995.
Hey, any movie with Will Smith and Tia Leone on it's got to be a good movie.
Yeah, Will Smith was great. Tia Leone was great. If I don't have to sit through another Martin Lawrence film in my life, it would probably be a good thing. But if they ever make Bad Boys 3, I might have to. 1996's Independence Day, which I remember was a great film. And I really feel that it's one that has held up over time, too.
Oh, absolutely. There's perennial talk of Independence Day Part 2.
I actually think that as long as it's done well, that would be a great movie to have a sequel to. And it was a good ensemble cast, too. I mean, yes, Will Smith was kind of the breakout on it, but everybody in it was good. I mean, there wasn't a single performance that I sat there and went, God, I wish they'd gotten somebody else for that part. Then, of course, Men in Black in 1997, Enemy of the State in 1998, Wild Wild West in 1999, which, on this list, was probably his biggest bomb.
Through no fault of his own, it was just a poorly written movie.
Yeah, it had problems pretty much from start to finish. I mean, I like Will Smith, I like Kevin Kline, I like Kenneth Branagh, I like Selma Hayek, I like Barry Sonnenfeld as a director. This should have been a great movie.
I think this movie actually suffered from the sum of the whole was less than the sum of the parts. You said it all. I mean, it's got great actors. It's got great director. It just missed at almost every turn. It wasn't really funny, which I think it was intended to be. It completely missed in its translation from television to movies. In the television show, you had the two main characters were best friends and could finish each other's sentences. In the movie, they hated each other.
And the race card didn't help matters. There were a lot of people who had trouble with Will Smith in the lead role. And, you know, a lot of people made a big deal out of the fact that, oh, that's racist. No, it's kind of realist for the time period.
It was played in the movie, again, for a humor's sake. It fell flat, and it wasn't funny, and it was extraneous to the plot. If you're to believe that these two characters, James West and Artemis Gordon, are best friends and that they're working for the government, it doesn't really matter that they're quote-unquote an interracial couple.
But the conflict between the two made it unbelievable.
If you watch the television series, you can be completely confident that the conflict isn't between Artemis and James. The conflict is between the United States government and the character of Lovelace. He was evil.
Yeah, agreed. Bad concept. The Legend of Beggar Vance came out in 2000, Ali in 2001, and he did a great job as Ali. You looked at him, and yes, you saw Will Smith, but you could also see Ali. He did a really good job of capturing the persona of Muhammad Ali.
Just in case you hadn't already figured out that Will Smith was a good actor.
He followed that up with Men in Black 2 in 2002, Bad Boys 2 in 2003, iRobot in 2004, which was probably his second worst movie.
I don't know if I'd go that far. Men in Black 2 and Bad Boys 2 were pretty bad. iRobot, again, I think suffered from the script. The fact that it actually wasn't iRobot. It just happened that the studio happened to own the property rights to iRobot, so they renamed their movie iRobot.
Yeah, when you promise an audience iRobot, you need to kind of deliver iRobot. That's a really good way to get the fanboys' panties in a bunch.
I guess it'd be kind of like calling a movie Star Wars, and then you get in there, and it has nothing to do with the Skywalker family.
It's all about pod racing, and he also provided his voice for Shark Tale in 2004. He did Hitch in 2005, which was a good little comedy. The Pursuit of Happiness in 2006, which, have you seen that movie? Oh, talk about a heartstring puller. Pure drama across the board, no action. So there goes about half of his audience right there. But it is a great, heartwarming story about a father who is trying to take care of his son in a downward economy, who is really struggling to just find work, and he's willing to do anything for his son. It's just an amazing piece. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend it, but don't walk in expecting some action thing.
Or comedy.
This is pure, 100% unadulterated drama.
This is based on a true story, isn't it?
Yes. And it's also Jaden Smith's first film. He has to stretch a little bit. He has to play Will Smith's son. He did I Am Legend in 2007, which is one of the very few movies on this list that I haven't actually seen. I'm not into zombie flicks, and for all intents and purposes, this is a zombie flick, isn't it?
Essentially. I mean, it's supposed to be about vampires, but it's definitely a zombie flick.
Hancock in 2008, which, again, I thought was just fantastic. There are a lot of people who panned that movie, but I just thought it was great. He was great. Charlize Theron was great. Jason Bateman was great. Good story. Did a great job of having its own internal continuity that worked well. I can't wait for Hancock, too, if they can come up with a good storyline for it. And then the last thing that he's done recently, besides Men in Black 3, was a movie called 7 Pounds in 2008. Again, it was a drama. I haven't actually gotten a chance to see it yet. It's one of those movies that every time I think about seeing it, either renting it or watching it on TV, there's always something else going on that I haven't gotten the chance to see it yet.
Just because in the last couple of years he hasn't been working as an actor doesn't mean he hasn't been in the business.
The third stage of his Tribeca is as a producer. He produced iRobot, a movie called The Seat Filler in 2004. He produced Hitch, Pursuit of Happiness, I Am Legend, Hancock, another movie called Lakeview Terrace, which starred Samuel L. Jackson, The Secret Life of Bees in 2008, which was about the civil rights movement. He produced 7 Pounds, and then in 2010, he produced The Karate Kid, starring Jaden Smith. If you go back to our 80s cast, you'll hear us talk about how great it must be to have a dad who's a producer.
That being said, Karate Kid was actually a pretty good movie. Good role for Jaden, good role for Jackie Chan.
Yes, it was a very good movie. It's just also nice to have a dad who's a producer.
Yes.
And this year, just a few months ago, he produced the movie This Means War. Came out in February, right around Valentine's Day. It's a spy thriller slash romantic comedy.
It has a great Star Trek tie-in. It stars Shinzon from Star Trek Nemesis and Captain Kirk from the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie.
And Reese Witherspoon.
Eventually we'll get her into Star Trek. Maybe she could be Nurse Chapel.
So he hasn't just been sitting back counting his money. I'm sure he's done some of that, but that's not all he's done. And then, of course, he just came out with Men in Black 3.
15 years after the original release.
And I would honestly say, I think it was probably worth the wait.
Considering how bad Men in Black 2 was, yeah, I would agree with you.
I think that I enjoyed Men in Black 2 a little bit more than you did, but it wasn't a fantastic movie. It really did retread everything from the first movie. There really wasn't anything original to it. And that's one of the things that I liked about Men in Black 3. They are actually throwing in a new ingredient, and it spiced it up a little bit for me.
I would agree. And interestingly enough, before we give our own reviews, I've read or seen a few of the professional reviews, and they're pretty mediocre reviews of the movie. Pretty universally been given like 2 stars or a B or a C or whatever the middle grade is. And I think, in my humble opinion, they're wrong.
Yeah. Anything that has come out in the past month runs the risk of running headlong into the Avengers machine. Now, I am happy to say that Men in Black 3 is at the top of the weekend box office. Not that I have anything against Avengers. I loved the Avengers, and I loved the fact that it's been number one for the past 3 weeks. I'm just getting tired of people using the Avengers as an excuse as to why their movie has bombed.
Yes. The reason Battleship bombed is it's a sucky movie. The reason that Dark Shadows bombed is because, well, it's a pretty mediocre movie.
If you give people the choice between a sucky movie or a great movie for the second or third time, a lot of people are going to go to the great movie a second time. So I'm glad that Men in Black is doing well enough that they won't be saying that. They won't be saying, oh, this movie did bad because it went up against the Avengers. No, it did well in spite of the Avengers.
Agreed. Stepping back for a second, you said it tried new ground. One of the things that I had seen complained about this movie is it doesn't tread new ground, which is, again, just plain wrong. Be honest, it does pay homage to the things that have come before. It shows some of that stuff going on. But it builds upon that as a foundation. It doesn't just sit there.
It builds a second story on the house as opposed to sitting there going, you know what?
Let's paint it blue.
Yeah, the time travel element really is a good addition. Yes. They're hunting down evil aliens who are trying to destroy the Earth. That's Men in Black. Adding extra layers like the time travel, having Agent J trying to find out why Agent K is the way he is, actually delving into these characters just a little bit more. This was actually the first Men in Black movie that I felt like there was something below the labels. They weren't just Agent J, they weren't just Agent K. But there were people beneath those titles.
Granted, it wasn't the main plot of the movie, but for the B story of the movie, there was this thread of what makes Agent K so Agent K. But there also was Agent J. What makes Agent J that?
Right. And I know, it's one of my big flaws when it comes to summer movies. I like to have a plot! I enjoy there being a story interwoven between the explosions.
And I don't mind that. I don't need it, but I don't mind it.
So, to see this story being woven in there really made me enjoy it more. Would I have enjoyed it if it was just, let's blow up a dozen aliens? Probably. But I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. Makes me wonder how many of those reviewers were just looking for, let's blow up some aliens, and got confused by there being an actual honest-to-goodness story.
It could be. Not 100% of a perfect movie, but still good. I would say probably my biggest complaint was just the fact that Tommy Lee Jones looked old.
Oh, yeah. Tommy Lee Jones is 65 years old. He looked every day of it. I wonder if they actually applied makeup to make him look older. I honestly felt relieved for him that he was only in about half the movie.
Will Smith had a good line. He's like, I'm too old for this. Not as old as you, but too old for this.
That was one of the things that kind of caught me by surprise. Now that I know when his birth date was, I understand that he's 42 going on 43 years old. But as I was watching the movie, I was like, Will Smith's getting wrinkles. What's happened to him?
It's interesting because I just rewatched the first one to prepare myself. I was like, oh my god, he's a baby.
I mean, he still looks good for a man who's 42. I mean, when he's sitting in his t-shirt and his guns are showing. I'm like, dang, I wish I had guns like that. But he's 42. What happened?
Unfortunately, he's getting old just like the rest of us.
Smith did great as J. Tommy Lee Jones was K. Strangely enough, Josh Brolin was Tommy Lee Jones.
Really? I love Tommy Lee Jones, and even more so Will Smith. I think he's probably the greatest actor of the end of the 20th century and beginning of the 21st century. But Josh Brolin owned this movie as Agent K.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job. I mean, there are a lot of actors who go on out there and they say, I don't want to do such and such's performance. I don't want to try to walk in his shoes. So just the fact that Josh Brolin was willing to walk in his shoes and then to make those shoes fit so perfectly.
He's got everything down. He's got the voice, the tone, the walk, the face, the expressions. Now, he did have something that the older Agent K didn't have. He had smiles.
Again, that goes back to that whole, there's a story here. And actually, there's kind of a built-in barometer in this movie. Because while I didn't have a problem with Emma Thompson or Alice Eve in the role of O, they weren't the same person. You didn't look at Alice Eve and go, oh, she's doing an excellent interpretation of Emma Thompson. She was the same character by name alone.
And there's a small homage to that within the movie. The first time that Agent J meets her, he's like, you're Agent O?
But yeah, Alice Eve wasn't Emma Thompson. Josh Brolin was Tommy Lee Jones. Other performances, Jemaine Clement played the big bad guy, Boris the Animal.
It's just Boris.
Jemaine did a great job, but throughout the entire movie, I was looking at him going, wow, it's so great to see Tim Curry in this movie.
Just as Josh Brolin was channeling his inner Tommy Lee Jones, Jemaine was definitely channeling his Tim Curry.
But he did a great job. It's just with the makeup job that he had and the voice that he was using and the mannerisms that he had, he really did look like Tim Curry. I thought for sure that it was Tim Curry.
I'll be honest, I'm surprised that you said something, but pleasantly surprised, because that's exactly what I was thinking through the whole movie.
But considering the fact that we're both Tim Curry fans, that's actually a compliment that we're paying him.
You know, he works at the same gym as my sister.
The other role that I will make mention of is Michael Stuhlbarg as Griffin.
And his voice, too. He was just so right.
Yeah, he did a great job. And he did a good job of being an integral part of the story without being too much of the story.
Yes, and even Barry Sonnenfeld had a cameo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was funny. During the time-traveling jump.
Yep.
And he does that in a lot of his movies, actually. Has just a little bit cameo. In the original Addams Family movie, he was the passenger aboard Gomez's train.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize it until I started doing some research either. But speaking of Barry, I had forgotten how good his movies were, because it's been so long since I've seen one of his movies. He's done a lot of my favorite, for lack of a better term, remakes. I mean, yes, we kind of harshed on Wild Wild West, which was one of his movies. But he did the two Addams Family films. He's done all the Men in Blacks. He's done a couple of other things in there. And he reminds me a lot of a Tim Burton-like director. But he's the kind of director that Tim Burton would be without the drugs.
You know, that's an interesting comparison. I would say, like, Tim Burton, like, quirky and dark. Whereas Barry Sonnenfeld likes quirky and light.
Yes.
Interesting fact about Barry Sonnenfeld. I heard him on an interview this week. And did you know that he directs his movies from a saddle?
I seem to remember hearing something about that.
He's deathly afraid of horses. But he has something that amounts to an A-frame on wheels with a saddle mounted on it. And he directs from it.
Okay, maybe not minus the drugs. But when you've had as many blockbuster movies as he has had, you can get away with directing from a saddle.
Well, I've always said that people from Hollywood are a different mindset altogether.
A different mindset. What else do you want to say about Men in Black 3?
I don't know. We really didn't spoiler it yet.
Yeah, as tempting as it is, because there's a lot of good stuff that is just waiting to be spoiled.
It's called a time jump!
And there are a lot of brilliant moments in this story. There are a lot of things that get telegraphed well ahead of time, but that doesn't subtract from their brilliance. The thing that turns Agent K into Agent K, I saw it coming from a mile away, but it was still wonderfully done. Pretty much the whole last half hour to 45 minutes was just fantastic. I would honestly say probably better than the last half hour to 45 minutes of either of the first two Men in Black movies.
There was a lot of good stuff in there. I'd have to watch it again to give you a real opinion on how I would consider that, but there was definitely a lot of good stuff in the ending.
So, number of pens in the pen protector?
I would say 3.
I would agree with that. I'll give it a solid 3. It wasn't as good as The Avengers, but it was really enjoyable.
I would agree with that completely. The Avengers was just about your perfect summer movie, but this was your perfect follow-up to your perfect summer movie.
I mean, I enjoyed Dark Shadows. You enjoyed Dark Shadows.
I enjoyed Dark Shadows, but I'm not going to say Dark Shadows was a great movie just because I enjoyed it.
Dark Shadows would have made a great March release movie.
Yes. I would say anybody who likes Johnny Depp or anyone who likes Tim Burton should absolutely put it on their list. There's no reason to skip out of this movie. If you're just a casual moviegoer, I honestly don't know what there is to get out of it.
Yeah, you're going to walk out of that movie theater scratching your head going, what did I just see? But this isn't Burton cast or Depp cast.
You know what would make Johnny Depp a triple threat? 3 movies in a year!
So, what's in the future for Mr. Smith? I would say not going to Washington, but I know that he's been to Washington, and the chances of him going back are probably pretty good.
Actually, that would be hilarious if it were possible to turn Mr. Smith Goes to Washington into a comedy.
I don't know. I think he could pull it off as a drama.
I already told you my opinion of his acting ability, but if you could turn that into a comedy, if there were just some like little hook to make it a funny story, I'm not that smart or creative.
Call your sister. I'm sure she knows somebody who can pitch it. Future projects. In pre-production already is a movie called After Earth, which just the fact that it has Will Smith and it's being directed by M. Night Shyamalan means that I'm going to see it. It could suck bigger than a black hole, and I'd still go see it.
Yeah, you know, the only Shyamalan movie I haven't seen is The Last Airbender.
I saw it, and it didn't deserve all the negative publicity that it got. It was, again, a good March release movie. Unfortunately, it got released in the middle of the summer as a blockbuster, and it wasn't a blockbuster. But I enjoyed it.
I want to rent it because my daughter loves Korra, and so I want to rent Airbender to see what she thinks of it.
There are other things that are rumored to be in the pipeline, but you have to take these with a grain of salt about the size of a boulder, because they're just rumors. Supposedly there's a movie called Winter's Tale, which is a fantasy story set in the 19th century. They are saying that there's going to be a Hancock 2, a Bad Boys 3, and, unfortunately, an iRobot 2.
And there's always the perpetual rumor of Independence Day Part 2.
Strangely enough, I could see an Independence Day Part 2 without any of the same cast. Not that I want to see an Independence Day 2 without the original cast.
Independence Day is the only Dean Devlin Roland Emmerich movie that I will watch.
Or watch again.
That's true. I did see 2012.
I'm sorry.
Like you said, you have to take these with a grain of salt. But given Michael Bay's relationship to Bad Boys and his heat at the box office right now, I can see that really happening if it's what he wants.
If it's what he wants. I would much rather see Hancock 2.
I would rather see iRobot 2.
Wow, that says a lot. Yeah, you notice we haven't done a Bay cast.
Who would want to sit here and hear us complain for an hour?
That being said, go see Men in Black 3. Go see anything with Will Smith in it. I mean, come on.
Well, thank you for listening to TripCast Episode 61, our 5th annual Triple Threat cast. As always, we encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
TwerpCast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012.